Walmart taking its battle with Amazon to a new level, dishing out $16 billion Wednesday to buy a majority stake in Indian e-commerce giant Flipkart. Amazon had expressed interest in Flipkart, but Walmart swooped in with its massive offer, desperate to grab a piece of India's growing retail market.
Streaming music service Spotify is dropping R. Kelly from its playlist. The company on Thursday issued a statement saying his music will still be available on the service, but Spotify will not actively promote it. The decision falls under the terms of Spotify's new hate content and hateful conduct public policy.
The U.S. drone industry may be getting some wings. The Department of Transportation on Wednesday revealed 10 new drone projects, part of a pilot program to expand how drones can be used across the U.S. Nearly 150 states, counties, cities, and universities teamed up with companies to submit proposals. The winners? FedEx, Google's parent Alphabet, Apple, Intel, Microsoft, AT&T, GE, and Airbus, among others.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It is May 11th, and it's 5:11 in the morning. We are glad you're here for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day. And we have a great show for you this morning. Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management. Our regular Friday talk about our portfolios and the economy. And a little bit later in the program, Brian Summers, a regular Friday visit with Brian from skift.com. He's the airline business reporter there. Some news about Southwest Airlines and service to and from Hawaii. That's right. You might be able to get some cheap deals to Hawaii soon on Southwest. That'll be in our second segment this morning. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Asian stock markets rallied today, tracing gains on Wall Street after a weaker-than-expected inflation figures soothed concerns about a possible acceleration of interest rate hikes. Oil prices were hovering near a fresh multi-year high. The Nikkei ending the day up about 261 points. That's about 1%. The Hang Seng up 312, about 1% as well. In Europe this morning, markets are generally mixed, with the FTSE a little bit higher by a fraction. The DAX and the CAC are lower. And in this country, futures are pointing toward possibly opening gains on Wall Street. Later, Dow futures up 37 points. NASDAQ futures have just gone negative, down about 1 point. S&P futures are up about 3. And that oil number, $71.48 a barrel, up about 12 cents since yesterday. Let's go right to Paul Nolte. We'll bring him into the conversation this morning. Paul's an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the economic news. I guess front and center would be inflation data this week.
Yeah, that's the big stuff for the week. We were all anticipating that inflation numbers would pick up, especially from the energy prices that we're seeing at the pump. And it did show up in the CPI data, but there's so much more that was actually coming off. So internet services and a lot of other services were actually weaker yesterday. The number came in at about 2.5%, which was in line with expectations. But you take out the volatile food and energy, and you start to peel it back. And in some cases, inflation's kind of rolling over a little bit. We're not seeing that pickup that everybody was anticipating. Similar to what we're seeing in the jobs report, we're not seeing the wage inflation either. So that was really the genesis for the two-day rally that we've seen in the markets, very strong on Wednesday and Thursday, and a little bit of carry forward today, because inflation is not an issue, and that may keep the Fed. They're going to raise rates in June, but it may slow them down a little bit or give them reason to pause later this year.
And this is obviously good news for consumers, because we're not paying more for some of the stuff that we pay for.
Well,
at least not a whole lot more.
Well, I mean, the problem with that is, again, we see it at the pump. And that's one of the first things that everybody looks at is, what am I paying for a gallon of gas, and how much does it take me to fill up my car? And that's the one that everybody takes a look at. They don't look at a lot of, you know, what is it for my internet service, my phone, or medical, whatever the other ones are. But that one always is the big one. So when we say, well, inflation was relatively mild, they're like, holy cow, you know, have you seen what happened at the pump? It's $3 now and going higher. So that's really where the focus is for a lot of consumers.
The Fed, will they look at all to what's happening elsewhere in the world? I know the UK left its interest rates alone because they're actually seeing a little weakness in their economy. Is that isolated to the UK, though?
It's not. We're seeing a lot of the economic data globally kind of rolling over. Coming into this year, we were talking about synchronized global growth, and we're seeing a lot of the numbers now starting to flatten out to maybe roll over a little bit. It's nothing that indicates that we're going to turn down or have a recession, but just slowing down. The Fed, I think, in a lot of their comments have been talking more about the U.S. economy specifically and not so much globally. For a while, the Yellen Fed was looking very much globally at deflation and Germany and Japan and so on, and a little bit more coordinated with the rest of the world. Right now, the Fed is on their own path of raising interest rates, and they are alone in doing that. The Bank of England was anticipated to raise rates in June. There was a 90% chance that they were going to do it a month ago. Now that's essentially zero with the comments yesterday. So it doesn't look like any other country is going to be raising rates anytime soon.
Yeah, and we talked last week about the European Central Bank keeping their rates the same, pretty much.
Right. And there's, again, still some discussion that later this year they may actually start their own quantitative easing. But Mario Draghi's been pretty good at pushing that off to tomorrow, when in, as we all know, tomorrow never comes.
Yeah. We often look at the scores of what the likelihood is of rate increase. Is it 90% for June, and then September, and then possibly December? Are those the two?
Those are the 3 months, and yeah, we're 95% or higher for June. That's pretty much a done deal and in the cards right now. And December's come down a little bit with the inflation numbers, but it's still a very high number. The markets are still anticipating that they're going to raise rates later this year.
Paul, hang on. We're going to take a quick break here. Be back with Paul Nolte. It is our Friday edition of the Opening Bell.
From ABC News Wall Street Now, stock futures are up heading into the final day of trading for the week. A new round of earnings and data due out this morning. It follows Thursday's gains, the Dow closing up nearly 200 points. United Airlines is reportedly looking to replace dozens of its jets. Reuters says the airline is in talks with both Boeing and Airbus for planes to take the place of about 50 767s in the United fleet. The deal could be worth around $14 billion. It looks like Starbucks is set to get rid of the customer-only rules for bathrooms. Howard Schultz, chairman of the board at Starbucks, says bathrooms there will be open to anyone. Last month, two African-American men were taken out of a Philadelphia Starbucks in handcuffs, accused of loitering. And there's questions about the future of MoviePass, that service that lets customers go to theaters to see all the movies they want for $10 a month, has about enough cash to stay open for two more months. That's from a new filing with the SEC. Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Our regular Friday conversation about the economy and our portfolios. Paul, what was the other economic news data point of the week that caught your attention?
Really, really, the stuff that we were looking at was more inflation, the CPI, PPI number. Those were the key numbers. We're going to get import-export prices later on today. And really, when we start taking a look at the markets as a whole, it is energy prices and it's the interest rate environment. We're still seeing a flattening of the yield curve and how the yields are reacting to the economic data. If the yield curve continues to flatten at the pace that we're seeing, we could see an inverted yield curve late summer, early fall. And then the countdown starts for a recession. And many economists now are calling for a recession, maybe late 2019, early 2020. And we're seeing that in some of the economic data where, as we talked about before, some of that data is starting to roll down a little bit and is not as strong as it has been coming into this year. So it's nothing that we are concerned about today, but it's certainly something that's on our radar screen for later on this year.
The job openings labor turnover survey, JOLTS, report was out this week, so still a pretty strong job market.
It's incredibly strong, and the weekly jobless claims number is the lowest in 50 years. The JOLTS data indicated that, and one of the key points that somebody had put together, it said that for those that are unemployed looking for work or underemployed, that there are two people looking for every one job at this point, and it's one of the lowest that we've seen in 20 years plus. So the job market is incredibly healthy, yet we all scratch our head as to why we're not seeing wage growth or some of the other things that we normally see in this type of a job market.
I always look at the voluntary separations mm-hmm. to see if people are leaving to go and find other jobs. That number seems to be flat as well, doesn't it?
It's flat, but it's running at a fairly high level. Yeah. So there are a lot of people that are very willing to leave jobs. And there's a couple different interpretations depending on how you look at the data. It is certainly up. People are willing to leave jobs today. If you look at the entire data series, it's not as high as you would expect in this type of economic environment. And I think there is some concern with people leaving a job, especially if they don't have another one lined up, even though the job market is strong. It's a comfort factor mm-hmm. of, you know, I'm here, I'm good, I don't want to rock the boat and leave. So, again, that's when you look at employees and their ability to move, and it goes back to the housing market. If I want to pick up and move to, say, Phoenix, there may or may not be a job down there for me, and what is the housing prices and availability of housing for me to move down there. So that flexibility for a lot of people is also important.
Competition's even fierce for part-time jobs. Just as fierce or more fierce. Yeah.
It is. And as I said, it is a very tight market. And that's why I said that's one of the concerns that we have. And one of the things that everybody's kind of scratching their head about is where's that wage inflation? Maybe we do need to get down, as you and I have kind of talked about, that 3.5% level. We need to maybe get down a little bit lower in order to really start to see that happen. But so far, that's one of the things that we're just confused about in this environment.
Let's talk about portfolios. What do you like? Where should we put our money?
Right now, we're seeing actually the emerging markets, international markets, which have been kind of weak as the dollar has regained some strength over the last 3 weeks or so, was very strong yesterday as the inflation numbers came in below expectations. And we expect the dollar to roll down maybe over the next 6 months or so. So the international markets, and especially emerging markets, are very inexpensive, still continue to be. And a good place to add as we see this weakness here recently. Technology in the U.S. has kind of reasserted itself, kind of took a back seat for a little while. But energy, certainly, and commodity prices in general, we're seeing pick up. So we're looking at a lot of the companies that produce stuff. If you drop it on your foot, is going to hurt. And those are the kinds of things that we're kind of looking at these days.
We had yesterday on a guy from Mike Quincy from Consumer Reports talking about all the things we can do to help improve gas mileage. I feel sorry for people that have those SUVs that are going to maybe by midsummer pay $3.50 a gallon.
Well, and that's the cycle. You know, when energy prices were up at $4 a couple of years ago, everybody was buying the much smaller cars, and a lot of the auto manufacturers were struggling because they were building those big SUVs and the pickup trucks. And we're cycling around the other way when gas got down to $2.50 and a barrel per gallon. A lot of people were picking up those big cars. So we may see that yet. I don't know if we'll see $4 at the pump, but we will be seeing higher prices for the summer driving season.
Paul, always good conversation. Have a great weekend.
Enjoy. Thank you.
All right. Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. You can find more about him and his colleagues at kingsview.com.
This is Catherine Davis with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by chicagoinno.com. Bucket Feet co-founder Raja Namani has begun his next venture after selling his footwear startup last fall. In January, he launched Rogue Advising, a strategy firm focused solely on online retail. The startup helps companies optimize their digital marketing and tailor strategies that fit each specific business. The Mom Project, a Chicago startup that's built an online platform to connect employers to viable female candidates, has raised $2.6 million in a seed round led by the Atlanta Seed Company. The startup says it will use the new funding to support new tech investments and the platform's expansion to other cities. And Northwestern University is launching an accelerator for biomedical startups. The university plans to commit $700,000 a year for the next three to find and fund startups that treat cancer, depression, and other diseases. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everybody. We're back with our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Happy you're here with us. This segment, we'll focus on aviation and travel news. Brian Summers is airline business reporter for Skift.com, and there's news about Southwest Airlines this week. Brian is with us via Skype this morning. Brian, Southwest Airlines moving forward with the service to Hawaii.
Yeah, we've talked about this a bit. Southwest is getting ready to launch Hawaii service. It may happen by the end of this year. It probably won't. It will probably be next year. Of course, Southwest flies only 737s. They can only fly so far. So Southwest is going to concentrate on the West Coast. They're going to fly from Oakland, San Diego, San Jose, and Sacramento to the Hawaiian Islands, places like Maui and Honolulu. This sort of thing was expected for a while. Southwest has long said that it wanted to fly to Hawaii. One of the reasons that you and I have talked about in the past is interesting. They would like to get more people to sign up for their credit card, especially people who live in California. And people get really excited about applying for a credit card if it means that they might get a free trip to Hawaii. They may never go for their entire life, but the idea that it's possible might make them sign up. But again, that's sort of old news. What's interesting and what's new is Southwest said that it would fly flights within the Hawaiian Islands. If people have been there, they know that the best way to get from, say, Maui to Honolulu is to fly. It would be ridiculous to take a boat. And Hawaiian Airlines, for a long time, for about a decade now, has had either a monopoly or a near monopoly on those routes. Fares are relatively high. It's a great business for Hawaiian. And now Southwest has come and said, you know what, we want to fly some of those inter-island routes. Southwest hasn't said what routes they will be or how often they will fly them. But we do know that Hawaiian is going to get some competition on those 15 to 35-minute flights. And Hawaiian is taking this incursion very seriously, and they put out a statement last week that I wouldn't call it necessarily nasty, but it said, you know what, we're ready for a fight.
Whenever we see this competition develop, it's always, well, I shouldn't say always, but sometimes ends up being good for consumers.
Absolutely.
So we could get some deals here.
We could get some deals. I mean, I don't know how many people listening to this segment are really going to be flying regularly from Maui to Honolulu. That's where you might see the best deals, you know, your $19, your $39 fares. But certainly also from the West Coast to Hawaii, we'll see some deals. And it's a relatively minor thing. I don't know if we've talked about this before, but lots of airlines are adding quite a bit of capacity to Hawaii right now. Hawaii is hot. And American Airlines actually said, I think last week, that for a very short time next winter, they're going to fly Chicago to Honolulu nonstop. It's a long way, but it makes it a lot easier for people in Chicago to get to Honolulu.
So the best, in terms of Southwest, I guess the best way we're going to get there is we take a flight to one of these California cities and then on to Hawaii. I mean, even then, though, it's probably going to be cheaper than one of the bigger airlines.
It may be cheaper. Airlines have this ability, and they do it all the time. They'll just match each other's fares. One interesting thing about Southwest, and I'm not sure that it matters so much, but if you hop on a flight from Chicago to L.A. to Honolulu on United Airlines, I think we all know now that you're not going to get any free food on board. But United Airlines is a full-service airline. They will sell you a hamburger. They'll sell you a piece of pizza. They'll sell you actual food because you're going to be on a plane for 12 hours. It does not look like Southwest is going to change its catering. So you would fly from Chicago all the way to Honolulu with a stop in Oakland, and you'd probably only have a chance to have peanuts and pretzels. They're free, but they're not quite good enough.
While we're on the subject of Southwest, we now have seen some data about their passenger load after that window incident. What do you know more about that, and what's Southwest trying to do to win people back?
Yeah, well, I can't say this enough. You know, Southwest is a perfectly safe airline. It has a great reputation in the airline industry. They did say that they saw a little bit of a blip a couple weeks ago after they had that incident where a passenger died. It looks like things are pretty much back to normal. I always expected that passengers would come back. I mean, I wrote about recently the fact that Southwest has built this reputation as not just a safe, reliable airline, but also what they like to say is a lovable airline. They've been building it since the early 1970s, and one incident like this isn't really going to affect anything. So the passengers are coming back, and as you and I discussed, nobody really knew. So Southwest had said, look, fewer people are booking us, but they didn't know exactly why. They knew that they dropped their advertising and marketing spend. They knew that they weren't advertising on the internet anymore. And so they said basically, we're making a little bit less money after this incident, but it's probably just as a result of taking down advertising and marketing.
Are they doing anything differently with advertising? I know I've seen in the last couple of days Southwest ads back on TV and on the radio. Is there anything differently they're doing with marketing now?
I'm not sure, but my guess is it's pretty much business back to normal.
Another story you've written is about GoGo. The CEO there talking about Wi-Fi. What did you find?
Yeah, I don't know how many people know this, but GoGo, the in-flight airline Wi-Fi company, is actually Chicago-based. They're based in downtown, and they were sort of a darling about 10 years ago. I mean, they were the first major company to put Wi-Fi on aircraft. Of course, it was slow and not entirely reliable, but American Airlines and Delta Airlines had it as long as a decade ago. And it was pretty cool, if people remember, in 2008, 9, 10, to just get on an airplane and be connected. GoGo has tried to change with the times, but I think that we all know that its service is not as good or reliable as people would like. I interviewed Delta Airlines CEO Ed Bastian last year, and he jokes that he calls GoGo no-go. And GoGo is literally their largest customer in the world. Back in March, GoGo replaced its CEO. So the new CEO, Oakley Thorne, is actually the biggest shareholder through his family holding company. He owns about 30% of GoGo. And on the earnings call, his first one, he said, look, I own a huge portion of this company, and so nobody wants to get more shareholder value than I do. You tend to believe him, but the stock has just gotten hammered, first since he took over and second since the earnings call that wasn't very long ago. It'll be interesting to see what happens with GoGo. They probably need more cash to run their business, and financing would be hard to get for a company like that. And even the new CEO said, we don't know what the future is going to be like. There could be some consolidation in the in-flight Wi-Fi industry. Nobody's really sure. They could get gobbled up. Private equity firm could buy them, or it could be business as usual. Not sure passengers care that much. They just want better Wi-Fi.
Yeah, and on the business as usual side of that, it sounds like the CEO is not going to settle for that. He actually had some strong words, said the company's lost its way. Did he give in this conference call? Did you get any sense of what they might do to get it back?
Well, the first thing that they're going to do is fix some mistakes that they made over this past winter. People paying attention to this may know that GoGo has staked its future onto something called 2KU, which is a new satellite internet that they launched. And they basically say that people can use the internet on the plane just as they do at home. They can even stream if an airline allows it. It basically works, as they said. They just had a major problem in the winter, and Delta Airlines actually told its employees about this. That's how we found out, and GoGo confirmed it. The de-icing fluid that was used at winter airports in places like Chicago and even Delta's hub in Atlanta was seeping into the antenna, and it basically ruined the antenna, and it made it so all these planes didn't have Wi-Fi in the winter. Just because of de-icing. Stuff like that shouldn't happen. GoGo says it has a fix, but Delta was not pleased. Let's just say that.
All right, Brian, always good chatting with you. We'll see you again next week.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers is airline business reporter for Skift.com. Make sure you follow on Twitter at Skift, and Brian Summers' handle is at Brian Summers, Brian with an I and S-U-M-E-R-S.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are up 50 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are moving higher as well. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Orion Samuelson is with us. Good morning, Orion.
And good morning to you, Steve. Well, yesterday the Department of Agriculture had a busy day with reports. What happens every year is the last Friday of March we get planting intentions reports from a survey taken of farmers across the country. And then the end of June we get the actual planted figures. And then come the first crop report of August, we get reality. We know what acres have been planted, and we know what kind of weather we've had, and so we get our first real estimate of what we're going to produce this year. But now in May, yesterday, the Department of Agriculture added another report that does give us an indication of what's going to happen. And I must say, a lot of surprises in that report, but the market did very little to react. The July wheat contract down 4¾ cents, July corn down 2 cents, and July soybeans up 3¾. That's not much reaction to some of the numbers we got, because I always ask our market analysts the first question, any big surprises in the report? And yesterday, Steve Georgie of Allendale and McHenry said, yeah, lots of surprises. So we'll have to see if they turn into reality. Cattle futures continue to struggle because of the up and down worries about oversupplies of beef. And yesterday, June live cattle closed $1.85 higher at $107.25 a hundredweight. So some of the market highlights that we have gone through so far this week.
Orion, back to that USDA report, some of those surprises. I was going over some of the report as well. Corn and soybean production is not expected to be very high this year.
Well, not expected to be as high as a lot of traders were thinking. We knew that we'd be planting fewer acres of corn, and that would affect the final yield and final production figures. And that we knew, but the numbers came in even lower than expected by the traders. So we're going to be planting about 90 million acres of corn, and I think that's down about 4 million from last year.
So not a huge reduction there. Is there any answer to the question why this is lower?
Well, some of the reasons is the fact that the farm income has continued to decline, and so farmers may not want to spend as much money on input like fertilizer and some of the more expensive seeds. The first quarter of 2018, according to the St. Louis Federal Reserve Bank, the first quarter of this year continued to decline in income for the 17th consecutive quarter, according to the latest Agricultural Finance Monitor published by the bank. And quality farmland values down 1.4% in the first quarter from a year earlier, first decline since the second quarter of 2017. So that could be some of the reason. But I look forward now to the June report that will give us some actual planted numbers. And then the first, to me, the first real report of the season comes in August with the August crop report, because then we know what's been planted. We know what has been growing during the season. We know what kind of weather we've had. And I think that the August report will be a lot more accurate and less speculation than the one that we got yesterday.
All right. Orion, thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you very much, and you do the same.
All right, Orion Samuelson with us this morning. Make sure you listen to The Morning Show with Orion Samuelson and Mark Max Armstrong tomorrow from 5 to 6 a.m. right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, May 11th. The University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Survey due out today. The rest of the calendar looks pretty empty. We'll get a report on import and export prices, and Fed Speaker James Bullard is out there as well. just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, May the 11th.